Yeah, so in particular, I will talk about this generalized scaling. We call it generalized because it can be applied to any type of interactions. And so I think that this makes this method complementary to the usual one in which we have cross-sections and masses. So, so as you know, in particular, there have been several detectors claiming for a long time or for a very recent time potential signals from light WIMPs. And the issue is, are they compatible? Are they compatible for some particular type of dark matter? They are not, or what? So it is interesting to compare them. And moreover, there are various, many experiments which have provided upper bounds, and so we want to know if those upper bounds are compatible or not. Again, for some type of interaction, the hope is that at some point we will find some kind of interaction or property of the halo that would allow all this to be on the same point to one and the same candidate. May not happen. The usual way of comparing we all are very familiar with is this, in which we plot the WIMP mass and, as function of it, the WIMP nucleon cross-section. And here you have all these banana-like regions pointing out to different signals in upper bounds, and you can see that the upper bounds are pretty good and reject almost anything that there could be. Particularly, these sky blue and blue regions correspond to the very recent CDMS2 silicon data. I will talk not that much as, of the results, because I haven't found any compatible with everything candidate, but of the method to compare, right? And so, so why we can do these comparisons? Well, here you have the, let me recall what is the rate. This is the expected rate. This is the differential rate with respect to the recoil energy, ER. And so this depends on the cross-section and the flux. And the flux is given, of course, by a model of the velocity distribution of WIMPs, local velocity distribution. N is the number density, which here is written as the local dark matter density divided by M. This is the local dark matter density of the particular dark matter candidate, which could be smaller than the total density, local density of the halo. Assuming that there is no segregation, which is also something that may not happen if the dark matter is self-interacting or consists of many, many different things. But assuming that it is that there is no segregation, then when one computes the relic density, if the relic density as a whole is a fraction of the dark matter density, we would say then that the local dark matter density of a particular candidate is the same fraction and so on. So this could be smaller. But it is always the local density divided by N. It cannot be, of course, larger than the local density of the dark halo. Now, when you make this integration, you see that you have to integrate over all the possible WIMPs which can leave a signal. And those are the ones whose velocity is larger, speed, is larger than a minimum speed. For an elastic scattering, the minimum speed is given by this, this is a non-relativistic scattering. It's given by this relationship, mu is the reduced mass, M, big M here is the mass of the target nucleus, and ER is the energy. So it goes to the square root of the energy. And again, this is the differential rate of particular energy. So you see that once you integrate, so the flux, here the flux, of course, depends on the velocity, on the speed in particular, not the velocity, free velocity, but the speed. So the, for usual cross-sections dominated by S-wave scattering, then we have a dependence of the differential cross-section with the speed, which is equals as 1 over v squared. And therefore, if you put here 1 over the speed squared, you get this particular integral, which has the distribution f of vt, usually taken to be a Gaussian, divided by the speed integrated over the velocity. And this is a function. You see that what remains is a function that we call here eta, only of the mean. So it is a function of the mean. And this function encapsulates all the information in the rate, in the differential rate, all the information on the local distribution of velocities of the WIMPs. And of course, if I multiply this by rho, the local density, then this factor, this multiplication, encapsulates the whole dependence for the dark halo. Now, usually, for a spin independent, this cross-section is a point-like cross-section multiplied by a form factor. And this point-like cross-section, for a spin independent, the interaction is coherent always with a nucleus. For a spin independent, then it goes in this way, the number of protons multiplied by the coupling of the protons, which is taken out, and then the number of neutrons and so on. And here you can then write this as a function of the cross-section with one single proton or neutron or nucleon in general. And so you see that here you can plot then the for a given velocity distribution, then you can plot any measurement or bounds on the rate in this M and rho sigma plane. And I want to point out that it is always rho sigma. So if rho would be smaller than the local density, the upper bounds on sigma would become much bigger. Would become much bigger. So when one compares these bounds with the LHC bounds, for example, one has to be very careful because they are of different nature, right? And the density, the relic density, what the relic density is, depends on the pre-BBN cosmology. So you know that things are related, and there are uncertainties here that are not present in LHC bounds. So when you put all this information together, you have to be careful about what you have to be, the comparisons have to be made with a grain of salt. Okay, so the standard halo model is what is assumed in those plots. So in order to make a plot, in this M and rho sigma plane, I have to assume that I know what is the halo, and it is always assumed in this comparison a standard halo. It could be isothermal, or it could be a little bit more general. It could be a Maxwellian distribution. Sometimes, very rarely, it's done with other things. But the experimental groups always take a Maxwellian distribution with an average velocity, which is about 220 kilometers per second, and escape velocity, which goes between 500 and 650 kilometers per second. And the density is always taken 0.3 GV per centimeter cubed, in spite of the fact that there are large uncertainties in this number. Now, of course, the main signature then of a dark matter signal would be an annular modulation due to the motion of the Earth around the Sun. Now, as you see, the differential rate, and this is a log linear plot, drops very fast, and actually this is 100 GVs. Right, it might be that. So if it would be 10 GV or so, of course it goes much lower. And for some experiments, for example, when the target nucleus is heavy, like for example in xenon, for these light WIMPs, the velocity tails of the distribution, the highest energy tails of the dark halo velocity distribution are very important. And because if these velocity tails are cut, there may be no signal at all. So, and we don't know these tails. Of course, we expect some degree of anisotropy, but that shouldn't change enormously the bounds. And of course, there could be something much more impressive, like, for example, a dark disk that is co-rotating to some extent with the disk and so on. This is very unlikely, at least in simulations, or the same thing. If Earth is on a clump or a stream, it is unlikely in simulations, but since we live only in one Earth, we don't yet know, so it could be. So there are uncertainties in these calculations. First of all, there is a detector response model that has large uncertainties, mostly at low energies. Close to threshold, so there are uncertainties in the energy resolution, efficiencies, and the fraction of energy deposited, which is detectable. The experiments don't detect directly the energy deposited by a proxy. Could be light or ionization, etc. Usually, what is measured, the energy which is measured, is measured in photoelectrons, number of photoelectrons, or for example, in electron equivalent energy, KVEE. Backgrounds, of course, are very important, mostly for these light WIMPs. It could be that actually all the dark matter signals are actually backgrounds, we still don't know. And then the type of interaction. It's not only spin independent or spin dependent, but there are many other type of interactions. For example, it's a spin violating in which the coupling with protons and neutrons is different. It could be a magnetic moment interaction. I will talk about this a bit later. Merely charge, dark matter, anapole dark matter, resonant dark matter, form factor dark matter. And of course, the collision could be elastic or inelastic. So there are many different varieties. And then the characteristic of dark halos, I said, which is, we don't know, and it is very important actually for light WIMPs. And so this is what points to this halo independent analysis. This was first proposed a few years ago, 3 years ago already, by Fox, Yu, and Wiener. So the halo-independent analysis says the following. Look, all the dark, the dependence on the dark halo is included in the differential cross-section in this factor. So if I have measurements of this rate, measurements or upper bounds, I can map this into Wiemian space and plot a function which is proportional to rho eta. Notice that actually this distribution depends on time and has the annual modulation. Usually just to take the first two terms of the harmonic series is enough. And so the annual variation of this function with time that induces a change, an annual modulation in the rate. So if you measure either just measured or have upper bounds on the rate or the rate, the amplitude, the modulation amplitude in the rate, they can be mapped into what we call here eta 0 and eta 1, which is the unmodulated and modulated amplitude of this function eta. You will see many times eta Tweedle or G Tweedle, as Mats and collaborators call it, which contains for spin independence sigma p and rho over m and sigma, which are all the factors that are common to all experiments. And you see that actually the cross section which enters here depends on the mass. So you can make this comparison for a fixed mass. So you see that both methods are complementary. First of all, you have to, with a sigma m, you pick up a range of masses that is interesting for your problem. And then for each one of those, you can make a range, you can pick up a range, and then you compare the data in this halo-independent manner. Please interrupt me if there is any question. Now the first, the halo-independent analysis was done for Fox, Yu, and Wiener, and then Franzen et al. Here did an extensive use of this. And the issue is that they took deficiencies and form factors constants over B. What happens is that this is a relationship. You see that it is very easy to relate the differential rate as function of eta. So if you have only one target, you invert this, and then you have eta as function of the differential rate. But usually we don't measure differential rates, we measure rates in beams, right? They are integrated over beams. And so there you have to then put form factor and so on. But in this method, the form factor, when considering beams, the form factor is considered to be a constant over the beam, the efficiency also. And then the energy resolution is included by extending range. The range is fixed then in recoil energy, extending it on both sides by the energy resolution. And of course, this is true only if you consider small enough beams that you can make this approximation. And here Matt can correct me. But this is therefore the way in which they included that the measurements, the potential putative measurements as crosses, indicating the horizontal line has this width, and then the vertical height of the cross indicates simply the one sigma deviation for the particular measurement. Now, for the upper limits, we use here, this was proposed by Fox, Yu, and Wiener, and used by Franzen et al. The smallest possible value, so here, maybe I should, because I didn't write. So if you have, can you see? So this function, as function of the mean, eta is a non-increasing function. Eta is an integral, eta of the variable is the integral between b and infinity of a positive function. So let me consider this b here. And so as b increases, you're integrating less and less of a positive definite function, so it is smaller. So it is non-increasing by definition. So what they propose is the following. Assume that I want to get a limit at this value, V0, and I call this eta 0. Then the smallest possible eta function that can have a value eta 0 at V0 is a step function of this sort. And this will give me the minimum possible rate for a function predicted by any function eta that has a value eta 0 at V0. So the rate, therefore, depends on this. So I have the rate in general for a general function will be larger or equal than the rate computed by for the step function. And then if the rate is larger, if this rate is larger than the particular limit that you have to compute in your preferred way, experimental limit, this is forbidden. And so you get that eta 0 larger than eta 0 limit is forbidden. Doesn't mean that something that is smaller is allowed. So And this is one of the things that makes this interpretation, the interpretation of this method, a bit shaky. It doesn't have a very firm statistical ground still, but you know, it is in its infancy, so it can grow.
Can you just go back a few slides? Can you go back to 3 or 4 slides?
Three or 4, I think it's all
back.
The all I
yeah,
have.
Here, sorry. Next one. No, go forward, sorry.
Forward.
One more.
Ah!
Thank you. So there is an assumption you make of the spectralizability of this velocity distribution, that the recoil cross-section doesn't depend on the velocities.
No, in reality, for our more generalized, you mean that it depends on the speed and not on the velocity?
The cross section doesn't depend on the speed.
Yeah.
Take your point back.
No. Oh, well, of course. That's why. I mean, this is correct for spin independent in the non-relativistic limit. This assumes really that, but this is not general. But it is true for spin-dependent and spin-independent cross-section. And this is precisely the generalization that I will talk about. This is not the general limit. This was the first thing that people have applied so far. Our method takes into account all the complications that have in more general cross-sections.
Is this true even if you have mediators which are very light?
No. In general, it can be different, and this is what I'm going to say next. Like dipole moment, this is what I applied it to. Precisely, this is the need for this generalized thing in which I have been working since February, actually.
Okay, so the point of
it was not simple. I mean, well, you will see that it is very simple a posteriori, but a priori, we didn't have any idea on how to.
So for a certain class of
yeah, for this class, it is spin independent. It has been applied so far before our paper, which appeared 2 days ago, only for spin independent.
Okay.
And it had a limitation, as you were saying, that, of course, if you have only one term with a different V, it doesn't matter, because here you can have any dependence on V, on the speed. And I'm not integrating this. This is just a function which I'm plotting onto, I mean, the value. So it doesn't matter. But what about if it has more than one? Or, for example, in resonance, there is a... an interesting big crazy idea of having resonant dark matter in which the resonant, the cross-section is then a Wigner-Weil resonance whose parameters depend on the target. So essentially here you will have no common function to compare with because you will have a different function for each particular target.
So since you mentioned resonance, maybe I'd have a comment. So I'm working on a resonant dark matter.
That's great. Then you can apply our generalized method.
Sorry, because just a slightly different comment. I found that I can fit all the data except the coaching. So anyway, so I'm working on that.
That's great. So maybe you can apply our method afterwards. I have to convince you. Yeah. So this is what I'm saying. What was done so far, right? But this is certainly it's not the most general, and this is the issue that I will address in a moment. So this is I'm very interested in hearing everyone later. Okay. Where was I? Here. So this comes from this paper, very nice paper, of Mats Franzen et al. Franzen, Sarkar, Felix Franzen.
Chris McKay.
That's it.
Ah,
five. Yes, five. That's why I put et al.
Yes.
So here they plot. You see, what they call G is what I call the eta, and this is the unmodulated. A part of the that comes from plotting the unmodulated part of the rate, and this comes from the annual modulation amplitude. Right? And here you have the crosses, which I already explained, and then the different limits. You see that these limits have a peculiar shape. This wouldn't correspond really to any eta because eta is a non-decreasing function. However, when you take this is done with a maximum gap method, we find the same. We find this weird shape when computing this limit. So again, these limits mean that G Tweedle, in this case eta Tweedle, couldn't be above, but that doesn't mean that can be below, right? It could be, I mean, it is for sure forbidden above, but it may be that actually it is also not allowed below. It's only a limit in this way.
It's a conservative.
It's a conservative limit, exactly. But you see that actually there can be no eta that can have this shape, because this is a non. This is an increasing function of the, in any case.
And this is also, so the limit on the annual modulation is also conservative, the delta G.
Exactly, and this is the limit on the modulation. Exactly.
It's conservative. It's conservative in the sense that to make that limit, you've assumed basically 100% modulation fraction. So I think you've made something much more detailed.
Exactly.
The expansion, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have an expansion parameter, which is Earth velocity over the minimum velocity? And then if the expansion is varied, then you gain another order of magnitude.
Yeah. So you can make a better.
So one question about the explode. Where is the crest?
It was not included. Oh, no, it should be.
It's just excluding data.
Yeah, it is included. Where is it? Well, this is not.
Sorry about
it. Presumably it lies just below that, right?
The pink one.
Where is the crest?
This is modulation.
I know, but
there is no modulation from crest, right?
No, there is no modulation. But I included. I included.
Can you read the lines there? Because I cannot read so well.
Yeah. So okay, so this is CDMS. Well, the best bounds for this type of spin independent with FP equal or 2FM equal couplings for protons and neutrons come from xenon, and this must be xenon in one way or the other. Xenon 100. This was the 100 days of xenon. This was at the time that was what was available. Not later on they have additional 225 days, but this was 100 days of xenon. And this here should be another xenon 10 S2. So you see that these are the ones that are the most restrictive. And practically, they reject everything that is plotted here, except for maybe this the lowest energy beams of different things. This is cogent, and this is gamma.
So the right panel is the modulated one. Left
the modulated and the unmodulated. They decided to put modulated and unmodulated separately. Right. When we did that, and I'm going to show, we put things together. Yeah, but we didn't do anything more elaborated than doing. We do exactly the same.
Okay, so I just didn't see for the unmodulated, I didn't see crest.
No. I think
crest are the lowest pins and the unmodulated one.
The lowest beam, okay, that's just crest. Okay, I just kind of.
On the left one. Yeah.
Ah, yeah, because it is unmodulated. Yeah. Crest is.
So crest are those. Yeah, basically those ones. Yes.
So that's the coding, color.
I don't know which is crest.
Yeah, but I think these colors don't apply.
Sorry.
You mean the energy on the right panel doesn't apply to the left? Okay, that's fine.
No,
it doesn't apply to the left. I thought that they were the same colors. Okay, I don't know because it is his paper, but his. I can show you in a moment mine, and then I can say because what we showed, because I.
The round is crosses the lower part are crests.
Okay.
Over here on the left hand side.
Ah, they, so you change the color. Okay.
Is that a good idea?
I didn't realize. As I said, this is about the method, right? Not all the, because otherwise, you know, we
can ask a question about the method. So if you change that assumption that you wrote over there on the blackboard, the assumption about making it a step function, does the relative position of these curves and data change?
We don't know how to make another type of limit so far. This is the way in which we get limits.
But for the f of b, you could choose, you know, whatever you want, right? So for the integral could change.
Yeah, but it is not right. But, then it is not the general thing because you can have, you don't know the this function. It could be any function that is non-increasing for crazy models, crazy Halo models, right? So without saying something else, the only thing you do.
Let me ask you this specific question. If you assume the standard Halo model, instead of making this assumption, would the relative position of all this curve change?
Yes, in general it would.
Yeah, but
right?
Then it is not Halo independent, right? So why would you do this? You go back.
I understand, but I want to understand what is, I mean, what are the implications of making this assumption, right? Because if you make that assumption, you fix a certain, you know, hierarchy of positions in that plot. So since it's just an assumption, I just want to understand.
This is only for the limits, so, huh? This is not for the crosses.
But yeah, definitely, you would better get a better constraint issue, which in a sense, if you made an assumption on the Halo, but then that would not be Halo independent. So basically, the conclusion you can draw, for example, for the left, from the left plot is that there is no way that you can, that with the standard assumption on particle physics, meaning that equal scattering on protons and neutrons and 1/2.
Yeah, because you have to assume your elementary particle physics for each of this.
Yeah, then this left plot, for example, will tell you that there is no way, if you trust Zeeman 100, there's no way you can make the crest signal consistent with exclusion limits,
so
whatever you do to it.
Exactly,
so
because this is real. This is the most conservative.
Yeah. Right. Whatever you do to Halos. But, for example, you could still imagine now, so what this can tell you is that if you believe both Zeeman 100 and Crest 2, then you will have to start changing particle physics to make that memory limit.
Right. That's so if you change particle physics.
Another really important thing here, I mean, V is a number, not a vector here, right? So this is assuming isotropy.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well,
in the generalized methods, which I will talk about a bit later, you do not need to do that, although it is usually true.
So we've known for some time that if you want to reconcile Dhamma with other experiments without strange particle physics, you have to have anisotropic velocity distributions, right?
Well, no. This anisotropic entered. The only thing that doesn't, we are speaking about the cross section. You have to have a cross-section which depends on the velocity, so an interaction that depends on the velocity. And that, for that, you have to have a magnetized, for example, if it is
forget about just do
this is general. This is general. It doesn't matter what this is. Well, this is any function that you put here, any function, V and T, and D3V. This is it.
So I can have all of the winds traveling in the same direction.
Absolutely. There is here. There is no assumption. It is what it is. There is no assumption. Whatever you want to put here is fine.
I think Graciela also mentioned that this is over conservative.
This is very conservative, right? This is conservative.
It's not very conservative. It's too conservative. Because you know that, okay, you do this for different beams, right? The eta of zero is for different beams.
No, it's for each
so
value.
So there is no one Halo which satisfies this step function for all beams, right?
That is true.
Exactly. So what you would like to improve is to get a statistical treatment such that you would also include the falling of eta, and that's what you refer to as the missing piece, no?
It is a missing big missing pieces.
Yeah, exactly.
Pieces, because not only here it is a missing piece, but also in this, which I will qualify then as averages. So if you let me go, what we are going to do when we take into account a general energy dependence of cross sections
Not cross-sections.
But also form factors, the cross-section, including the form factors and the efficiencies and so on. We are going to be doing here weighed averages of ETA. And also, so you are comparing weight averages with this upper limits, and this is also very difficult to say what is that we are doing. There is an attempt that is your way of doing things, but also does not include a general treatment of the form factors and efficiencies. So, okay, hello. Yes.
For this delta function, like the upstream. Right.
This corresponds to having essentially a delta function here in the speed, right. Though not in the velocity, which is not realistic. So if you have here a delta function in the speed, you will get then a precise on this, because either you are in or out.
So you can interpret your bound as basically being a stream, but
unbounded. This is a delta function in the speed. A stream is a delta function in velocity. It is not the same, but it is close enough. Yeah, it's like a stream, but having only one speed. Right. So, doing the same kind of thing, Fox, Liu, and Wiener doing exactly the same kind of assumptions, namely relating the eta or g function to the differential rate, and then making some assumption so that the efficiencies and so on are constant. So whenever you have to integrate, you have to take this out of the integral. Then you can compare an experiment with another just by comparing the rate in this manner. And this was used, this has been used, for example, by, as far as I know, this is the only experimental collaboration that has ever used this limit. But of course, they clearly say that they do not take into account energy resolutions, because of course it is very difficult to take into account energy resolutions with this way of doing things. So what you can do is to compare, so pass to V min, assuming that you have a control of what is your energy, exactly your energy, your recoil energy bin, then you pass to V min, and you choose. Therefore, through Vmin, you can pass to the equivalent energy range for another experiment, and then you put them together. So you can plot all the different experiments, and this is Dama cogent. Dama is this, the gray thing. Cogent is the yellowish thing, and then the CDMS modulation. And this is all plotted as corresponding to the energy in germanium in CDMS. And you can compare them. But this has all, again, the issue of not taking the energy resolutions, response functions, whatever, is extremely important for light WIMPs, because you are very close to threshold, where these things, how you model them, is extremely important, right? If you are very far away, change things don't change as much. But okay. So what Paolo Gondolo and I did then last year was actually to make a formalism in which you start with your detected energy, E prime, which could be, for example, KVEE for cogent or Dama, or could be the number of photoelectrons for xenon. And so you have an integration over the energy resolution function that takes into account the mean value, which depends, for example, for Dama or so, it depends on the quenching factor. This would be the mean value of the measured energy. And then, of course, it has an energy resolution width. Many times you can model this with a Gaussian distribution, but not always. For example, for xenon, energy resolution function is due to Poisson fluctuation, so it has a different shape. But in any case, you model that, and you include this, and here you have to integrate. So this gives you the probability that actually you will, a particular recoil energy will be measured as a particular detected energy. Now, it is here that you put then your raw eta V min function. Now, changing variables from ER to V min here, you can write, and using the same, this is the same prefactor that Mads and collaborators used, rho over mass sigma p, eta min.
So this is what we call
eta twiddle, so we don't have to always write the same factors. We can write always the rate, the integrated rate, in this manner. You see that here you have the function, this function, eta twiddle, a weight, we call it also a response function, in the mean, that includes all the characteristics of the detector, and then an integration. Now this, for a particular measured energy range, this would be non-zero only in a particular fixed V-min range. And this tells you precisely which V-min range it is corresponds to a particular experiment. So this is depending on the halo, and this function should be common to other or to all detectors. This is a response function that includes all the information on the detector and also on the cross section. And so this, as I did it and as it is written here, this is only valid for a spin independent. But what I will do is for any general interaction, I will be able to write this same equation with an R that is this response function that is dependent on the detector and the cross section, and this function that is common to all experiments, and therefore I can use to plot all the experimental data. Okay. For a spin independent, it works well that this R actually is only significantly non-zero in the same interval where Mads and company have actually taken it. So it's the same. The method is the same. The method is reverts to what they have done if you consider a small enough intervals and so on and so forth. But on the other hand, for example, for CREST, CREST has some significant jumps in efficiency and acceptance and so on. So with this method, you are not forced to take the boundary of your energy bins at those. You can extend your whatever you want, but then it is included automatically in this function. In this respect, now, so the measurements are translated now into weighed average. You see that R contains this function eta here. So if I take it out of the integral, what I'm doing is a weighed average with a weight that is this response function, given by this response function. And we do then the same thing when R is the average rate over a year or the amplitude. And you can see that in this way, in the same way in which the modulation amplitude can never be larger than the average rate, and that's the cannot be, right? Then eta 1, which is this amplitude, can never be larger than eta 0. So if you find that actually, that's why we plot this both in the same plot, because you will see that in some instances, the eta 1 measured by an experiment is larger than the eta 0 measured by another experiment. That means they are incompatible for, you know, it's a very good way of saying. And then the upper bounds, well, the upper bounds we do exactly the same way, but now this translates, of course, you put here this function. This is the downward step function, theta of V0 minus V min. So you put it in. This is like a model for R. The function is here inside. So you see that you integrate between 0 and V0. So, and this takes into account the fact that if between 0 and V0, this function is 0, then you have no limit and so on and so forth. So it is automatically included. So you see that once you set up a program in this manner, having all the characteristics of your detector, this is it. Now, this are, many people say that we got so accustomed to see all these crosses that time. But these blue crosses are the data of cogent. And this is background plus unmodulated rate of cogent. And you can see that this is really, the modulation amplitude is really high. It's about maybe a quarter, 25%, 30% is high. This contains background, so we are waiting. If this goes down, that would be even worse. This green crosses correspond to the data of Dhamma. The crosses are all overlapped because the data of Dhamma is presented in beams that are much smaller than the energy resolution of Dhamma. And because Dhamma is so picky and so easily offended, and we don't want to offend anybody unless it is absolutely necessary, then we didn't change that. But this reflects very clearly the issue, this issue that the energy resolution of Dhamma is much bigger than the beams.
What is the resolution of Dhamma?
I think it's a few kVs or so. I don't remember sincerely. But
they never give a energy dependent function.
This way, must be.
They cite one number, which can't possibly be right at 50 kV and 2 kV. So we just don't.
So what is this number? Do we know?
I think it's something like 2 or 3 kV.
2 or 3 kV. Yeah, it is really not a very good. But in any case, it's bigger than their. Yeah. So.
But the things they give, they are like 2 to 4 and 2 to 6, right? This is, if I remember.
No, there are 26 or something, 36, I don't remember now, beams that they give.
Yeah, where is the signal is in this?
It's in the first ones, but this includes everything. You see here, there's nothing. There's no signal here. And here, there's another one that we cut. Yeah, so this is about 2 kV. But the energy resolution, you can see, is bigger. This is extended by the energy resolution. So it's, maybe this is the same order as the pin. And so there is this jungle of crosses. In any case, you can see that cogent and CDMS are compatible for these candidates, which are spin independent with equal couplings to N and P. Here there are the three crosses of the silicon data, which I guess is unmodulated. And you see this incompatible. If I take this to be unmodulated data, it is overlapped and even below some of these crosses that correspond to the modulated data by Dhamma and cogent. So for this candidate, I think this is incompatible. unless this silicon data is 100% modulated. Right? If the modulation amplitude is the same as. But otherwise, it is forbidden. Also, it's very unlikely that these are the crosses that correspond to the unmodulated data of CREST. And here there is another one. This is the last one. So, again, at least it's this first. Cross of unmodulated data of CREST, and they are very, very close. So you see that the unmodulated data of CREST is really incompatible with the modulated data of cogent and CDMS. Now, again, that we have...
Experiments, though, have all sorts of uncertainties associated with their low energy response.
Yeah, right? We model each of them in a particular manner. And you can see, because of course this change a bit.
All these error bars are in the real world bigger than any of these, right?
Well, we tried. Yeah, for example, if you change Q, of course, if you change the average value of the measured energy, this moves a bit around. And so what we did was to give, which I think. Oh, yes, you can see that here I took Q for Dhamma, I took this Q 0.3, I think. Where is it?
See,
it
said.
Does it say?
You said
the
region.
Ah, here. Yeah, 0.3, thank you. Yes. And but then, of course, if you change the. Here it is 0.45, but it is also for this, spin violating, isospin violating. So this idea of isospin violating, if you don't, everybody knows this is spin violating, isospin violating. Yeah? Well, isospin violating is that actually you choose this particular ratio in such a way as to cancel practically the coupling with the xenon, which would be really extremely unlikely that precisely nature has chosen a candidate that cancels the cross-section of the interaction with the experiment that provides the best current bound. It stretches your belief, right? But in any case, so.
Xenophobic.
Xenophobic. Right, xenophobic.
Somebody already wrote that.
Yeah. Oh, yes, that's a good name. Okay, well, so if you do that, then you can see that actually it's better. But it is better for here it is xenon. The xenon bounds are a bit retreat a bit. So they uncover almost all the crosses of the blue crosses of cogent and the green crosses of Dama Libra. Mostly, if you use, I think here, Dama is also 0.3. I didn't put we have made other choices for Q, but I decided not to put it because this is not about all results, but about the method itself. In any case, this crosses now, you see, the unmodulated rate that's measured by silicon becomes lower than the modulated rate measured by cogent and Dama. They are incompatible for this candidate. Can see very clearly that they would be incompatible. Now this is the limit, so if you consider the same data as providing a limit, you get the limit. If you consider providing a sigma, you always get the sigma. It's just below the limit. And this is the case, so we did, this is silicon interpreted as a limit. Okay, so now this is the difficulty. Assume that you have more general interactions. For example, this magnetic dipole moment.
Before you move on to the next thing, if you accept, is this done for 9 GeV, for 9 GeV mass, right?
Yes, and we did it also for, I didn't include that, but we have for 6 and for 15, or 12, something like that. I didn't put it in.
But that's important, right?
Because, it is important. You have to do it. So it is, these things cannot exist independently. You have to pick up a region of interesting masses, and then you do this analysis for that particular ranges. And so we did it, but it doesn't change, the conclusions do not change a lot. This moves right and left, they get compacted. I mean, I can show you the limits, I didn't put them in.
I'm still trying to figure out exactly
I can show them
implications of doing that assumption. If I go in the parameter space at sigma versus mass, which is what everybody does, as you said, people usually do the standard Hello model approach. So is this equivalent to plotting in the sigma versus mass plane the usual things, but without, instead of making the standard Hell assumption, I choose for an f of b a delta function and I plot different regions for different.
It's a bit dodgy because there is no realistic model, even for a stream, that can be a delta function in v. Moreover, this is a way at each point of getting a limit, but of course then you change this, right? You will, this is the way in which I get the limit from any possible, I get the most restrictive one from all the possible different energy beams that I can choose, right? For here, I use this Halo model and I do the same thing. And I obtain different limits. And I choose the lower one, the lowest one of all the limits, because it is forbidden by a particular energy range, right? It is not easy for me to understand exactly what is the equivalent in sigma n.
If you plotted it in sigma m, you could get sort of this same function on the y-axis that you're plotting about But now you would have to take a slice at a fixed V min and plot that with M instead. So you could do both of these things and get the same answer. It's kind of easier to choose a region of M that we're interested in, given that people have already told us we think there's
right.
like this, than for V min.
But if you fix an experiment and you fix a map, and you're in a specific position in mass, in the sigma versus mass plot, then it's fixed.
What you want is to not fix the experiment at least, right? You want to compare all the different experiments.
No, but you can compare, you can plot different regions for different experiments, and once you fix an experiment, the mean is fixed.
Uh-huh.
Right. So I'm trying to understand whether there's something, or if it is just a remapping in a different.
No, I think it is a completely different set of variables. Right. One is if you go back to what it means, you can see it here. In one case, you are assuming that you know this function eta of v min, and the other, I want to get information on eta of v min.
So when you're applying the limits, you are choosing, as you said, you're essentially choosing a different step function for each energy
bin
that a given experiment has a limit in. So it doesn't correspond to like choosing it. Any one specific velocity distribution in the
signal. V min can give you in different energy.
Different velocity distribution, if you wish, for each energy bin, and it's all the time the most conservative one in terms of setting a limit.
Yeah, there is one in particular that will give you the best.
But it just sounds that you're in the hyper conservative case in which you're tuning everything.
Whether there is a
velocity distribution that could possibly.
I don't think that with these candidates there is a velocity distribution. There is no velocity distribution. This is what we are saying that can make this measurement. Understood as unmodulated rate compatible with this. But the issue is that this doesn't have a statistical meaning, right? This is a one sigma. But what does it mean that it is here? It is two sigma, three sigma? I cannot make this kind of a statement. But this is not necessarily a drawback of the method itself, is that we haven't developed it enough. This is the easiest thing that you can imagine doing. We're working on that. It's not easy. It's not so easy. So if you have any idea, the collective imagination and the mind power of our community is much bigger than what a bunch of people can think. So, but within this framework, there is much more to be done. So I think that they are really orthogonal. This is my idea, but they are orthogonal to each other. Okay, so here it is where the difficulty comes from.
You can just
it is 12. Oh God, I thought I didn't have enough. No. Then okay. So, but that's great. This is what you were saying. For example, pick up this magnetic dipole dark matter. It has in the non-relativistic limit. Well, even in the relativistic limit, it would be the same. But in the non-relativistic limit, it has two contributions. One is the charge, is the dipole moment charge coupling, and the other is the dipole moment magnetic field of the nucleus coupling. And but the important thing for this is that you have 1/v² as the usual one, but then you have a term that is independent of v, right? It goes as 1/v². Therefore, you have two terms. Now, when you integrate, you put here your two terms, and you make this integration for every term, you will get two different functions. One when you integrate the v to the -2, and the other when you integrate just 1/v². So you have two functions. So now, unless you do, a multi-dimensional plot, then you cannot plot just on one function, eta, because you will have two. This is the apparent problem. And as I said, for example, if you have a resonance, and the resonance shape depends on each target nucleus experiment, each experiment in reality, then you would have absolutely no common, not two, but you have zero common function, because each time you integrate a sigma that depends on whose shape depends directly on the detector. So you cannot single out a function. Is that so? So what I'm going to prove is that you can write this exactly in the same way, and I don't expect that you will know, you will understand all the algebra, but it's very simple. Eh? It's not, it's just, you know, integrations and so on. It's very simple. So I start again from the differential rate given in measured energy with its efficiencies and so on, and the energy resolution function. And then I put here this integration, and I leave the integration. In this case, I assumed that this sigma dt depends on the speed, but you can do it also not dependent on the speed. If you take it on the speed, then instead of having the velocity distribution and d3v, I can put here the speed distribution. It's a little simpler, but otherwise I can define this other weight with a v here, vector, v vector, instead of speed. So now, changing the order of integration, I can rewrite it in this manner. I can rewrite the integrated rate in a measured energy range. You see, this is the integration of this, which is the differential rate in the measured energy. And I can write it in this manner. You see that this is already some kind of weight and something that depends only on the halo. But if you see the usual function is just the integral of this f of v over v. So if I pick up the derivative with respect to this lower value, right, it's the lower value, I get the minus d eta dv. So you see here that I can very easily integrate by parts. I integrate once by parts, and I use the fact that the surface integral, this constant integral, that would have the multiplication of eta and h between 0 and infinity, goes to 0, because eta goes to 0 and b going to infinity. When b goes to infinity, eta goes to 0. And this h, actually, is an integral, you can write it in this way, between 0 and v. So when v goes to 0, h goes to 0. So there is no surface integral, what you will call surface integral in this. And so you integrate once by parts, and you get exactly what I promised, where now, formally, it is the same as we had for independent. But in reality, this is the derivative we call the integrated response function, because we call R the response function. Now, this includes all your information about your cross-section. Your cross-section is integrated over all your efficiencies, can be energy dependent as much as you like, and form factors and everything. So this is the essential function. And then you pick up the derivative. Now, so far we have used only these equations, but it is interesting to see that you can write, you can continue this integration by parts, and then you can express the rate in terms of what we call this partial moments. They are like the kth partial moments, partial because you do not integrate from 0 to infinity, but from v min to infinity, this is partial, of v minus v min to the k. And if this would be a distribution, which is not, F of B T over V would be a distribution. F of T is a distribution with some weights. But in any case, so this is very interesting, and actually because we didn't like much what I'm going to say, I'm going to point out all the drawbacks of the way in which we do things. We explored during 2 months or so doing things with high moments, and we found out that it was equally ugly, and so we returned back to the ugly thing that we did originally, which is what I'm going to present. But this was...
What is T?
What is T where?
Use time, right? So that's
yeah. The
because the Earth.
Right. This is always t, right? And this is t because of the time dependence of the Earth velocity around. Okay. So again, the measurements. So now, when you do this r, and
let me say this.
So this would be the response function curly r that we have for a spin, for this particular for gamma. And for this particular 0.5 keVee bin. And here is what it would look this curly R for the spin independent. When you do this curly R as a derivative that we saw and so on, you get something that diverges linearly in the case of magnetic dipole. We cannot integrate this. This is not good. Moreover, it will give you a range, because now we are going to use the range by integrate cutting wherever the surface, the area, I should say, under the weight function is less than 5%. So we are going to consider the width of the crosses, I mean the bases, the weight, where the weight is in B mean is significantly non-zero only when there is only 5% of the area to be cut. And so here we cannot allow this. So what we did was simply to modify by dividing by B mean to some power. And we chose finally to do B mean 1 over B mean to the 10. If you take another higher power of B mean, you're privileging lower and lower energies that depend on the modeling of your resolution, energy resolution function at very low energies, in the very low energy tail, which you do not know. Usually the tails of the resolution functions are not well modeled. And so we picked up arbitrarily, so this is what is ugly. And we said, oh no, this is so ugly, let us do something else. And whatever else we tried was equally ugly. So finally, we settled by this. And so instead of compare, so you see that here, if I have this function eta here inside in the rate, I can multiply and divide by v to the r, where r is a number that we picked up to be 10, as I show you. And then I take out the average of VR eta. Of course, VR eta is also a function that is common to all experiments. It depends only on, this is V mean to the R and eta of V mean. So it doesn't matter what I compare. It's the same function for all experiments. It depends only on the halo. So I plot there. And so I plot that one. I take the average. And for the plots to look similar to the plots in a spin dependent, and they are much more clearly, then we divide by V mean to the R. Now again, the same thing. We do this downward step, and you see that since now the response function is the derivative of this integrated response, and I'm integrating a derivative, of course I have the function. So it is just this. The limit is given by this function. Okay, so with this, now this is what we get for magnetic MDM, magnetic dark matter, essentially, magnetic dipole dark matter. And it doesn't look good. This is for 9. I have it also this time, yes, for 6 and for 15. Maybe I should start from 6 is the one that looks a little bit better. So you see that these are the sinon 10 and sinon 100 225 days, and you see that only this, I would say that this is okay. Cogent, it doesn't look good. It is practically now.
Can I make this look better by changing
on? You can try. Yes, I have tried, and it looks. What happens is that for a small r, this cross. By the way, I put this vertical bar is at the position of the maximum of the weight, the maximum of curly r now, and this horizontal bar is cat, where the area under curly r, which is the weight, would be less than 5%. So I cat 90%, the central 90%. Of the foot of this weight.
Are you talking about curly R?
Yeah. So if I do, yeah, sure, because now I'm using curly R divided by multiplied by V to the minus 10. This changes a bit. The only thing, it looks better and better. My regularization.
Yes.
It shifts this regularization.
Can I interrupt for 1 second? We're 15 minutes over. Maybe
let me again.
Okay.
Right. No, it doesn't. It doesn't change the conclusions that much, because the only thing that moves is really. If I would take a smaller, this becomes more confused. If I would take R bigger, the only thing that changes is a little bit this, but this changes too. The conclusion is not. The conclusion is not change much, because this changes too. The limit changes, and the cross changes. And yeah, approximately, you know. This is not ideal. This is ugly. We didn't find any other way to do it better, but that doesn't mean that. So in any case, so this is for 15, you see that actually for 15, as you increase the mass, becomes thin and becomes even more important. But so it doesn't look good. Yes. And the outlook, and I'm done. It seems to me, at least, that this scalar-independent method to compare the data is complementary to the usual method, which is done necessarily assuming a certain particular halo model. Here you have to assume a particular mass and a particular cross-section, of course, but this is always so. This generalized halo-independent method can be applied to any type of interaction. So now any type of interaction can be compared. And you can take into account all the characteristics of each experiment, and also can be applied to inelastic scattering. I didn't show it, but this H is chosen different from inelastic scattering. We have an appendix, and we're doing this, comparing now. The way in which compare data up to now is far from optimal. Comparing averages over V-min intervals for putative dark matter signals with upper bounds on negative searches computed in this manner does not have a clear statistical meaning, and I think this is the major drawback. If we can get a better statistical limit, this will become a standard, I think, a way of comparing data. That's my opinion, at least, but we'll have to see if we can do better. That's it.
Thank you.
and I thought maybe it was too short.